This is Audible.
Hachette Audio presents Frostblood, written by Ellie Blake, read by Jennifer English.
Part 1, Chapter 1. I offered my hand to the fire. Sparks leaped from the hearth and settled onto my fingers, heat drawn to heat, and glittered like molten gems against my skin. With my free hand, I pulled a bucket of melting snow closer and edged forward on my knees, ready to douse myself if the sparks flared into something much larger. Which is exactly what I intended. Winter solstice was 6 weeks away, but my village, high in the mountains, was already blanketed with a thick layer of snow. Grandmother used to say that the true test of a Fireblood's gift was in the cold, but she died before she could show me more than a most rudimentary of lessons, and Mother had made me promise never to practice at all. It was a promise I couldn't keep. If the king's soldiers discovered me, wasn't it better to know how to wield my heat? I closed my eyes and focused on my heart, willing the gathering warmth to surge upward and out the way Grandmother had taught me. If I did it right, the bright sparks on my hand would burst into tiny flames. "Come on, little wisp. Where are you?" After years of being told to damp down my fire, keep it hidden, make it invisible, I struggled each time I tried to find it. But there it was, a small, churning tendril. I coaxed it forward, a reluctant thread that grew a little, then a little more. "That's it." I held my breath, afraid to break the spell. A gust of frigid air whipped my hair across my face. The sparks in my fingers died, and the wisp darted back into my heart. Mother slammed the door and shoved the quilt back against the crack at the bottom, a deep shiver shaking her fine-boned frame under her cloak. "It's wicked out there. I'm chilled to the bone." Seeing her tremble, I finally scooted to the side, revealing the hearth. "I thought you were delivering a baby." "It wasn't time yet." Her eyes widened at the tall flames, then narrowed. I shrugged, my excitement wilting. It was so cold.
"Ruby, you were practicing."
The tone of disappointment was familiar.
"If even one person sees what you're doing, just one, they could alert the king's soldiers. With the summer being so wet, and the grains running out, people will do anything to survive, including taking a reward. I know. You don't have to tell me again." "Then why are you doing this? It's bad enough when you're not trying to use your gift."
She waved her hand at a pile of half-burned rags. Scorch marks still stained the floor. My cheeks warmed. "I'm sorry I lost my temper the other day. Again. But tonight I could almost control the flame." She shook her head in a tense movement that told me there was no use pleading. I wrapped my arms around myself and rocked gently. Finally, her wind-chapped fingers reached out slowly to take a lock of my hair, which she always said was lucky to be black and not red like some Firebloods. My skin might be a little too sun-kissed for a child of the north, but people didn't look closely in the sleepy village, where no one had powers, frost or fire.
"I understand that your gift is a part of you," she said softly. "But I lie awake at night worrying. How can we keep your secret if you insist on using your fire, even when you know it can spiral out of control?"
It was the same question she'd asked over and over during the past few months, when I'd decided to start practicing my gift, and I replied with the same answer.
"How will I learn to control it if I never use it? And if we're not safe here, why don't we go somewhere safe?"
"Not that again.
You know we'd never make it to the border, And even if we did, we'd be on the front lines. The coast is heavily guarded now. We should have left years ago, I said bitterly. We should live in Sudesia with the rest of our people. She looked away. Well, we're here now, and there's no sense wishing for what isn't. She let out a sigh as she caught sight of the depleted pile of kindling. Ruby, did you really need to use half our store of firewood? I swallowed past the guilt. I won't add any more logs to the fire. When it burns down, we'll freeze. I'll keep you warm. You can sleep right next to me. I patted my mattress, which I'd pulled close to the hearth, just out of range of stray sparks. Her gaze softened, a smile tugging at her lips. You're better than any fire. You never burn me, even if I roll too close. Exactly. A fireblood daughter can be very useful. She gave a bark of laughter and my heart lightened. I am grateful. Believe me. She pulled me into a tight hug, gasping and laughing as she felt the sting of heat coming from me in waves. It's like holding a cooked chicken. I think you'd better take a walk to cool off. See if you can find some more kindling to replace the lot you used up. I pressed through drifts, the snow hissing as it melted against my shins above my boots. The wind howled from the southwest, yanking the hood from my head and raking through my hair with pine-scented fingers. The air was bitter, but my skin was still hotter than normal after practicing my gift. Mother had said to gather firewood and bring it home, but she also wanted me to calm down. Surely it was better to expel some of this heat out here where it was safe. I'd done it before, sneaked out late at night into the desolate, snow-draped woods, my hands thrust into a hastily built fire as I willed myself to control the flames. All I'd managed to do was singe the edges of my cloak. I gathered a bundle of small sticks, holding them tightly. The forest held its breath, eerily silent but for the rustle of wind in the treetops. Although I knew no one ever came here, I still looked around furtively, my heart beating thickly in my ears. Closing my eyes, I searched for the little wisp of flame I'd found earlier. The sticks grew hot in my hands. The wind changed direction, barreling in from the north and carrying the dregs of a wet winter storm. I shivered and clutched the sticks tighter, struggling against the cold seeping into my pores and leeching the heat from my body. Suddenly, the distant sounds of footsteps echoed through the woods. I dropped the sticks and clambered onto a rock, knocking snow from it in heavy clumps. To the northwest, the path veered down into a gully, where an overhang protected it from snow. In a few seconds, I would see whoever approached without being seen myself. First a hood came into view, then a metal helm flashing between tree trunks washed grey under a steel sky. The blue of the men's tunics shot startling colour into the starkly white scene. Soldiers, breaking the quiet with their heavy, crackling steps and ringing voices. Blood rushed to my heart, fear blossoming into heat. I'd been warned 1,000 times about the king's soldiers, but I'd always told myself we were too high in the mountains, too insignificant to warrant their search for firebloods. I hoped they were just passing through on their way from the barren north. But our hut was right along the path they were following. They could easily stop to raid our larder or use our hut for the night. We couldn't risk them getting too near me, feeling the heat of my skin. I slid off the rock and shot towards home, my shuddering breath whisper quiet as I scraped past trees and bushes, using undergrowth and my knowledge of the bend of the land as cover. When I reached our hut, Mother was sitting by the fire, her long braid hanging over the back of the woven bark chair. "Soldiers," I said, rushing to grab her thick cloak, still drying by the fire, and shoving it at her. "In the woods, if they stop here." Mother gaped at me for a moment before launching into action, She grabbed a rag and packed up some dry cheese and bread, then stumbled to the scarred wooden table, where healing plants dried in the warmth of the fire. We'd spent hours gathering the precious herbs, and neither of us could bear to leave them. We packed them as quickly as we could, folding them into scraps of fabric tied with frantic fingers. The herbs were swept from the table by the wind as the door crashed against the wall. Two men emerged from the snowy darkness, their blue vests each emblazoned with a white arrow.
"Where's the fireblood?"
The soldier's small eyes moved from Mother to me. "We're healers." Hearing the tremble of fear under Mother's bravado made my legs weak. With long strides, one of the men cornered me and grabbed my arms. My throat convulsed at the sharp reek of old sweat and foul breath. His cold hand slid to my neck. I wanted to turn my head and bite his wrist, hit him, rake him with my nails, anything to get his hand off me. But the sword at his side held me still.
"Her skin is burning hot," he said with a curl of his lip.
"She has a fever," Mother said, her voice desperate. I took a deep, shuddering breath. "Hide your heat. Push it down. Calm yourself." "You'll catch my fever," I said, trying to keep the tremble out of my voice.
"I can't catch what's wrong with you."
He pulled me towards the door, his hand tight on my arm. I struggled wildly, trying to twist out of his grasp, and kicked over a bucket of red berries I'd gathered before the recent snow. They spilled across the floor like drops of blood, crushed under his boots as he pulled me out into the moonlight. Pressure grew in my chest. It was as if the fire in the hearth had crawled into my ribcage and wanted out. Grandmother had described the sensation, but I'd never felt it like this. It stung and burned and pressed against my ribs from the inside. It made me want to rip off my skin just to let it free. The ache grew until I thought it might kill me. I screamed, and a swathe of stinging hot air surrounded me, covering my attacker. He let go and fell to the ground, howling in pain. I scrambled into the hut where Mother struggled with the other soldier as he pulled her toward the door. I grabbed a log from the woodpile and brought it down hard on the back of his head. He pitched to the side and lay still. I took Mother's hand, and we stumbled out the door and into the night. The soldier I'd burned was still on his hands and knees, pressing snow into his face. We moved as fast as we could through the thick drifts, away from our hut, away from the place that had always been warmth and safety, a riot of fear and confusion making my mind as numb as my fingers. I had to get Mother away, keep her safe. At a fork in the path, I pulled right towards the forest, where we could lose ourselves in the pines that grew so thick snow didn't reach the ground. "Too cold," Mother panted, pulling against my hand. "No shelter there. The village." We pounded past farms and the shadows of houses until Mother's steps slowed, and I half-pulled, half-dragged her through the worst of the drifts, which had poured like frozen waves over the path. As we slogged through the shadows next to the blacksmith's shop, I saw orange lights bobbing in the village square. "Torches," I whispered, pulling back on my mother's hand. It didn't seem real. I'd come to the village at least once a week for as long as I could remember, not just to buy food and supplies, but to get away from the solitude of our tiny hut, to exchange nods and smiles with people, to smell baking bread and the occasional waft of rose water from the shopkeepers' wives and daughters. Although I couldn't truly call anyone my friend, there were people who always answered when I greeted them, who were glad to take my mother's cordials for a sick father or sister or child. Now my cozy world had broken like a glass jar dropped into stone, spilling familiarity and security, never to be gathered back again. The smells were all wrong. The acrid smoke of torches and the reek of too many hard-ridden horses with their unwashed riders. We wheeled and doubled back, but as we passed a space between buildings, three soldiers wearing the white arrow emerged from the dark like spectres, their hands on us before we could move. They pulled us towards the square, where groups of people waited, looking frightened and dishevelled, as if they'd been hauled from their beds. I twisted and turned, searching for a way out, but I couldn't leave Mother. She stood quiet and still beside me.
"Is this the Fireblood, gal?"
The man was tall, with blade-cut cheekbones and a sandy beard, and he spoke with an air of command. His coat shone with polished buttons. I scanned the familiar faces of the people from my village. Graham, the miller, and his daughter, Flax. The farmers, Tybald, Bracken, and Tom, and their wives, Gert, Lily, and Melody. They had all come to my mother for treatment when they were sick, but surely they didn't know what I was. I'd always been so careful, and we'd been nothing but good neighbours. A boy my age stepped forward. My heart leaped to see that it was Clay, the butcher's eldest son. At the harvest festival, he'd pulled me to the side as the village danced around the fire. His hand had trembled in mine as we shared a kiss in the dark. He'd drawn back after feeling my lips, so hot on his own, but he hadn't pulled his hand away. After that, we'd stolen looks at each other when I went to his father's shop.
"She's the one, Captain," Clay said, his lips trembling. "She killed my brother."
My mother gasped and squeezed my hand. My body had gone numb. A few weeks ago, my mother had been summoned by Clay's father. His infant son wouldn't nurse. The baby's skin was cold. Mother tried every salve and curative she knew, and finally took me with her to see if any natural heat could warm the child's skin. But the baby died anyway. I cried for 3 days afterward.
"You know that's not true," I whispered. "I tried to save him."
"Fireblood," said Clay's father. "You brought this on all of us."
I shook my head in disbelief. "Clay, you're the one who brought the soldiers here." Clay's face twisted, but he didn't answer. He just turned away. As if by an unspoken command, the villagers retreated as the soldiers moved closer. In moments, my mother and I were the only ones left, two shivering women ringed by blazing torches.
"There's one way to know for sure," said the captain,
holding his torch in front of him with a glimmer of enjoyment in his cold eyes.
"Firebloods don't burn."
"Get away, Mother!" I pushed her to the ground. The torches were almost on us, six or seven coming from all sides, the heat searing my face. The fire from one leaped to the fabric of my dress. Flames ate at my clothes and roared in my ears. My skin was blistering hot. But it didn't burn. The captain stepped forward, his hand moving to his sword, and Mother threw herself at him. Her nails slashed down the side of his face, drawing a bead of blood. I tried to pull Mother back, but as I came close, the captain's booted foot crashed into my chest. I fell to the ground, gasping, the fire on my dress hissing into steam against the snow. As I struggled to my knees, he lifted his sword, almost lazily. Then he slammed the hilt down onto Mother's head with a sickening crack. She crumpled to the ground like a broken doll. Her hair spread over the snow, wispy and delicate, as if drawn with a piece of charcoal. Her long, lovely neck curved like a wilted flower stem. I crawled to her side and took her shoulders. Called out to her. My hands fluttered to her chest, her neck, searching for her heartbeat, strong and steady like she was. But she lay still. The world froze.
"No, no, no."
The timid little flame in my chest flared to a river of heat, far beyond my control. I didn't care. What was the use of hiding it now? I breathed in a gasp that stole the air from the sky, the trees, the world. The wind seemed to twist around me, the eye of the tornado. I exhaled. The flames that covered my body expanded, erupting with a roar and pinwheeling forward. A chaos of writhing, panicked men blurred in my vision as soldiers fell to the ground, pushing their faces and hands into the snow. My mother's still form lay behind me, her hair and limbs in a tumble. I reached out to gather her to me, but hands seized my shoulders. I lashed out with my fists and searched my mind for that well of flame I'd found in my deepest self. The heat died as they dropped me into a horse trough, my body breaking through a layer of ice into water that stabbed my skin like needles. Rough, wooden walls pressed against my sides. I pushed up, my chest burning with singeing cold, and was shoved back down. I clutched at the edges of the trough, my nails digging into the wood. Finally, I was pulled up, gagging out water and sucking in great mouthfuls of icy air. The captain, his head gilded by a flickering orange light, bent down and grasped a fistful of my streaming hair, shoving his face into mine. His face was red, blisters forming on his cheeks.
"You'll pay for what you did to me and my men. Your whole village will pay."
Fire already blazed behind him, storefronts and houses belching out black smoke. Some of the villagers tried to stop the soldiers, whose torches touched wooden walls and piles of firewood and carts, while they hooted and shouted as if this were an evening's entertainment. Their voices mixed with the wails of those who could only stand by and watch as their livelihoods burned. Rage mixed with panic, heating my blood and making the water steam.
"A fitting punishment for harbouring a fireblood, don't you think?" said the captain, his eyes glittering.
"So everyone would suffer because of me."
"I'll kill you for what you've done this night," I managed to whisper.
The flames cast strange shadows on his leering grin.
"Tie her to a horse. We'll take her to Black Creek Prison."
"But Captain," said a soldier, "the fire."
"Then knock her out." Pain split the back of my head.
The last thing I saw before my world faded to black was the white arrow on the captain's chest. The mark of the Frost King. Chapter 2. 5 months later. Booted feet approached in an unsteady shuffle, a sign the guards were already deep into their cups. It was just past sunset, the light from the tiny barred window withering into a ruddy glow.
"Wakey, wakey, little wretch."
I lay huddled in my usual position, knees up, arms wrapped around my chest to hold in my body heat, which the stone floor seemed so greedy to leech away. I sat up slowly, my ankle cuff clinking against the chain. Three faces leered at me through the bars.
"What time is it?" Bragger asked,
his words tangling together in his mouth. He was thoroughly drunk.
"Time for you to toddle off to your barracks,"
I replied, my voice scratchy from thirst. He gave a sly smile.
"How do you like your new accessory?"
I glanced at the dull grey shackle.
"I'm not sure it matches my dress."
He snorted a laugh.
"Filthy like the rest of you. And how does it feel?"
"Unnecessary."
"Then I guess you won't be using that heat of yours again any time soon."
"Depends on whether you decide to show your special attention to any of the other prisoners." A few weeks before,
Braga and his ale-soaked lackeys had decided they'd had enough of the racking coughs coming from the older man in the cell next to mine. The man's cries for help cut through the layers of numbness that I'd built in my mind. Although the dirty conditions and spoiled food had weakened my health and my gift, I'd managed to reach through the bars to give Braga a nice jolt of heat on his bare forearm. The beating had stopped, but the prisoner had died that night, and I had inherited his ankle chain as a reward for my interference.
"None of your concern either way, fire filth," said Braga. "We might just turn our attentions to you next time. Won't last a day when we're through you."
Inside, my stomach lurched, but outwardly I was as calm as glass. "You've been promising me that for months, and here I am. I think you've become rather fond of me. Templeton here has been giving me extra rations." Templeton, the smallest and quietest of the three, started to protest, but Braga just grinned.
"I won't fall for that again, turning us on each other so we forget about you. I ask you again, you dirty bit of char. What time is it?"
"Time to burn all of you into ashes." I hadn't realized I'd said the words aloud until he laughed.
"Can't have much fire left in you, you would have done that a long time ago. But just in case. Rager, you got the bucket?"
"Right here,"
said Rager, scraping the metal bucket against the bars. A key snicked in the lock and the door swung open.
"What time is it?"
Braga asked, low and serious, the tone that told me it would only get worse if I didn't play along. I gritted my teeth. "Time for my dousing." He smiled into my face, a mask of cruel anticipation. I concentrated on staying still, not backing away. No matter how I tried, though, I jerked when the frigid water crashed over me and hissing steam rose from my skin. The guards doubled over with laughter.
"That just never gets old," Braga said, fouling the air near my face with his breath. "A whistling kettle in the shape of a girl. I wonder what would happen if we poured out all that red tea."
I lifted my hand slowly to brush back a lock of soaked hair. His eyes followed the movement, alert.
"I'm not scared of you,"
he said. But he kept his distance as Rager stepped forward and swung another bucket of water, this one full of chunks of ice that cut my cheeks and tangled in my hair. I gasped, wishing I could control the steam that so entertained them. But then again, without the steam, there would be no fear. I'd seen what they did to the prisoners who didn't scare them. A third bucket soaked my back. I started to shiver.
"I don't know why the executioner hasn't come for you yet," said Braga. "But it's only a matter of time."
He gave a swift kick to my shoulder, knocking me off balance. I curled up in a ball as the cell door closed with a clang, their laughter moving farther away. I am as cold as the prison walls. I feel nothing. Ice cracked like the breaking of bones. I woke with a jerk, heart racing. A dark shape, something strange and inhuman, had been hovering over me, touching my cheek in a blistering caress. I blinked away the dream, and the prison came into focus. Frost swept the prison in a white wave, crusting over stone walls and insinuating itself into every crack and keyhole. It spilled across the floor and hardened into glittering sheets that stopped inches away, leaving me on an island of bare stone. Booted feet scraped to a halt outside my cell. I stifled a groan. Not again.
No more guards tonight.
But guards didn't smell of oiled leather and soap. My eyes flicked up to a tall, hooded figure hulking outside my cell, a torch held in his right hand. My spine tightened, and fine hairs rose on my neck. Another hooded shape joined the first. This figure was smaller and leaned on a walking stick that he tapped with each step. A short white beard flowed over the collar of his robe.
"So you think this is the one?"
he spoke quietly, his refined accent jarringly out of place in this pit of low-born murderers and thieves.
"Look," said the taller figure, his voice deeper, more vigorous. "See how the ice refuses to touch her."
He sucked in a breath and blew it out with force. The water in the air turned to ice and fell over me in tiny pellets that steamed back into vapor as they met my skin. I bit off a moan, my eyes wide with terror. So these were Frostbloods, who had a power in complete opposition to my own. I struggled to keep my breathing even, to hide my panic.
"You see?"
His voice was low but exultant.
"Sit up, little one," the shorter figure said,
tapping the bars with his stick as if knocking at my door.
"We wish to speak with you."
I remained still, willing them to move on and leave me in peace. I hadn't felt so frightened since the day the soldiers came to my village. The guards didn't have the gift, and they still managed to make my life a misery. At least they were afraid of my fire. What could a Frostblood do to me?
"Do as he says," said the man, who stood tall and broad and imposing on the other side of the bars. "Sit up, or I'll find a bucket of water, and then we'll see how you shiver."
Defiance heated my skin. I unwound my arms and sat up. The old man stepped closer.
"How old are you?"
I frowned, searching my mind for the answer. Days blurred into months, which could bleed into years in the king's prison. He seemed to understand my uncertainty.
"It's been 2 weeks since the vernal equinox."
A dull ache spread through my chest. I'd lost nearly half a year. 17, then.
"You burned the king's soldiers, some of them badly," he said, "though with the help of skilled healers they survived."
"A real pity," I replied, my voice as cold as the ice-coated floor. He chuckled and looked to his companion.
"It's curious that her hair is black. The truly gifted often have fiery hair."
He reached through the bars toward me.
"Show us your wrist."
I brought my hands to my chest. "Why?"
"We only wish to see."
His voice was soft, gentle. Without thinking, I lifted my arm, the tattered sleeve falling open to reveal my thin wrist. He took the torch from his companion and held it close to the bars, the light falling on the thick vein that pulsed like a fat red worm under my skin.
"See how it shines so red."
He marveled as I pulled my arm away. He pushed back his own sleeve to show me the vein in his wrist, cold blue instead of crimson.
"We wish no harm," he assured me. "We're here to make an offer. If you complete the task we require, you'll have your freedom."
My heart fluttered in my throat. The word freedom rang in my head like the pure, clear note of a temple bell. The very thought of it was a painful temptation, to feel fresh air in my lungs, the kiss of sunshine on my skin, the play of wind in my hair. I trembled, torn between longing and terror. There are worse things than dying slowly in a cell. The two figures loomed still and silent in the flickering light, frost crackling under their feet.
Their breath fogged the air with a cold mist.
"What is the task?" I asked.
The old man looked around and shook his head.
"It is something you will be only too eager to help us with."
"Why would I help a Frostblood with anything, except to die?" His weathered hands rose and pulled the hood off to reveal a lined face with skin darker than my own, long and lean with noble bones. His eyes, so light blue they were almost white, burned into me. His lips held the hint of a smile.
"Frost and fire were friends once."
"Not in my lifetime." He looked to his companion and back to me, his expression intent.
"Then, perhaps this will interest you. Our target is the throne itself."
I pressed my hands to the cold stone floor to steady myself. It was what I longed for, the only thing I'd wanted since the day the soldiers had taken everything from me. To kill the king, who'd ordered that raid. If it weren't for the king, there would have been no soldiers, no captain, no prison. My mother would still be alive. I met the pale gaze, my head spinning. They wanted me to kill the king for them. But at what cost? "You expect me to trust you?" He spread his hands.
"We are here offering you a way out. If we are discovered, we will be hanged.
If you're lucky." He nodded. "And if I refuse?" The taller man blew out a breath.
"Then you can rot in here until you're nothing but a pile of bones held together by chains."
My lip curled. "One shout and the two of you will rot in here with me."
"A charming offer," said the broad-shouldered figure. "I can't imagine why no one has come for you sooner."
A muffled laugh from the old man.
"Enough, Arcus. Do you agree to our terms, girl?"
I considered my options. From what I'd heard from the other prisoners, most of the Firebloods in the kingdom had been killed or driven away. Some were probably rotting in prisons, as I was. But sooner or later, the executioner would come. I could likely escape from these men with greater ease than I could escape from the king's prison. I set my jaw and nodded. The older man bent toward the keyhole and blew into it. Ice spiked around the opening, followed by a loud click. The door swung inward. "And my chain?" I asked, motioning to my ankle. He stepped close, leaning on his stick, and sent out another breath. Ice formed in the keyhole of the ankle cuff, but melted a second later. He tried again, and again the ice melted.
"Your resistance to cold is too strong. Can you repress your ability, girl?"
I shook my head. Grandmother had died before she could teach me. A low groan echoed down the corridor from the guardroom.
"The guards are waking," said the one called Arcus. "Stay back."
Before I could blink, he exhaled a blast of freezing air at the chain, pulled a sword from behind his back, and swung it down. I gasped and jerked away as the brittle chain cracked in half. The air echoed with the rending of iron, followed by another distant groan.
"Hurry," urged the old man.
I tried to stand, but a mutiny of pain in my joints pulled me back down. My muscles had grown too weak to support me.
"Carry her, Arcus."
Arcus bent down, his hood stopping inches from me. The scent of soap and horse and leather filled my senses.
"If you try anything," he said, leaning close to my ear, "I'll break your skinny neck."
I glared and held myself still, wishing I could see his eyes instead of shadows. Only his chin and lower lip were clearly visible. Both were strong, well-formed, and puckered by a thick, ugly scar.
"If you hurt me, I'll burn you so badly even your mistress will run in terror."
He snorted softly, then slid his arms under my back and legs. As he lifted me, the weight of the cuff pulled against my ankle. I grunted in pain and was surprised when he set me down again, pulling a piece of cloth from his robes. He wound it around my ankle under the metal so it wouldn't chafe. Then he scooped me back up. When my thigh touched the cold skin of his bare arm, he sucked in a loud breath through his nostrils, but he moved quickly and quietly, even with my weight in his arms. As we mounted the crumbling stairs, Braga stumbled into the hallway, blinking and wide-eyed at the sight of a prisoner being carted away. Frost fogged the stone corridor and smeared the floor in glittering, interconnected webs. Ice clacked like a thousand chattering teeth as it rushed over Braga's legs and up his midsection to cover his arms and neck. He opened his mouth, but his words were blocked by the sudden appearance of a mouthful of ice. I stared at the older man's raised hand, ice crystals shining on his fingers. But I had no time to marvel at the strength of his gift. More guards were grumbling into wakefulness, their voices carrying into the hallway. Arcus strode past the frozen figure to a door propped open by a thin board, the older man following quickly. As the heavy door clanged shut behind us, I trembled with the reality of escape. My lungs filled with the sweet, clean air of outdoors. My eyes dazzled by the almost forgotten sight of stars, like torches in a darkened room. Beneath my thigh, Arcus's arm was bitter cold. His breathing had grown shallow. "My skin burns you, doesn't it?" I asked, noticing his furrowed brow and clenched jaw.
"It's your stench that burns my nostrils, Fireblood, and nothing else. I hope Brother Thistle is enough soap in the abbey to make you bearable."
If he was averse to being near me, that was fine. The feeling was mutual.
"Are you Brother Thistle?"
I asked the old man, who was taking laboured steps toward the carriage and driver waiting in the shadow of a building across the street.
"That I am, girl. And what is your name?"
"Ruby," I replied. "Ruby Atrera."
"Ruby,"
he repeated, smiling.
"How fitting."
Chapter 3. I had forgotten the bone-rattling experience of a journey by carriage. Arcus sat next to me, with Brother Thistle in the seat across from us. As we bounced over the rutted tracks that snaked away from the city, I tucked myself into the corner farthest from the younger Frostblood and his icy skin. Even though I was wrapped in blankets, my joints ached with cold, and the waves of frigid air coming from him didn't help. Arcus gave an exasperated sigh.
"I didn't know Firebloods were so susceptible to chills." I glared at him. My heat had kept me alive when other prisoners had coughed themselves to death or frozen in the night. But over the months, my inner fire had dwindled to the point that I was cold all the time, even if I still felt warm to the touch to Arcus. I doubted he would understand, and with the pain I was in, I didn't care to explain. After a couple of hours, the moans I couldn't stifle irritated him to the point that he agreed to a brief rest. We rolled to a stop on a deserted stretch of road. The driver stretched his legs, while the two hooded Frostbloods trudged off to speak under a large tree, its skeletal branches silhouetted by a bright crescent moon. "She's a weak little thing," Arcus said, just above a whisper. "I question whether she'll even survive the journey."
"Indeed," said Brother Thistle in an equally hushed tone. "But she survived the prison. She may have hidden strength, and perhaps she has other gifts we haven't anticipated."
"Like excellent hearing," I suggested, making the monks startle. We weren't so far that we couldn't turn back to the prison. I couldn't let them see me as weak. The old monk bowed, his voice edged with chagrin.
"My apologies, Mr. Trera."
My cheeks seemed to crack like dry leather, and I realized I was smiling at his discomfiture. It was the first time my face had formed that expression in so long that I had almost forgotten the feeling. Arcas turned toward me, the moonlight reflecting off the clasp of his cloak. Something about his silhouette and the bright metal sparked a flash of memory of figures moving toward me in the flickering torchlight. My smile faded, and I huddled deeper into the blankets.
"I'll take your rudeness as a sign of improved health," he said.
In a minute we were off again, passing forests and hushed villages. There was just enough moonlight to see the caved-in roofs, doors hanging off hinges, and broken fences. Most of the homes, whether finely built or made of mud and thatch, were abandoned and falling into ruin. As men and women had marched off to war, the hope of planting and harvesting enough crops in this harsh northern land had gone too, leaving hunger and starvation behind. The fields stank of decay, even worse than they had months before when I'd been taken to prison. An hour or two later, the land changed. Instead of forests and fields, the moonlight silvered low bushes and scrub frosted with snow. We rattled over what felt like a goat path leading up to the side of a mountain.
"Are you sure you wouldn't rather just kill me now?" I said through clenched teeth, attempting to keep my innards inside my body with my hands pressed to my stomach. "It would cause less suffering, and the end result would be the same."
"We have a use for you," Arcas replied. "And it doesn't involve watching your bony carcass bounce down the side of a mountain." He sounded as though he was tempted. Same as I was tempted to push him out of the carriage as we rounded a high cliff, or maybe set his precious hood on fire.
The land leveled to a high plain hemmed in by craggy slopes dotted with snow-covered pines. What had appeared to be a pile of rocks from a distance resolved itself into a sprawling building with a tower rising high on one side. The moon sat atop the tower as if someone had jammed a sickle into its flat top.
"The abbey you mentioned?" I asked, noting the heaps of rocks beneath gaping holes in the walls.
"The prison is a palace by comparison."
"Feel free to walk back then," Arcas answered coldly. "I'm sure the guards will welcome you with open arms, and the executioner too, no doubt."
The executioner didn't seem bothered with me. No doubt he's preoccupied with the many dissenters rounded up by the king's noble soldiers. He's not likely to remember me until the end of the border wars. Arcas snorted.
"You'd be dead by then."
I pressed my lips together. He was probably right. The carriage pulled up to a stable door, and the driver hopped out while a broad figure shuffled over to help with the horses. Arcas stepped out and reached for me. For a man of such size, he moved lightly. I stiffened as he lifted and tucked me against his cold chest.
"Don't burn me, and I won't hurt you," he said, invoking our earlier bargain.
Pain distracted me from fear. I bit my cheek and clung to his robe, closing my eyes against the throb of my ankle.
"Tell Brother Gamut our guest has arrived,"
Brother Thistle said, motioning to a man waiting at the door.
"Then take her to the infirmary."
"Guest," I repeated dryly. "Does the abbey welcome many guests with ankle chains?"
"Its standards have fallen abysmally," he replied, stepping over paving stones that had heaved up like jagged fingers. "Which is why this is the perfect place to keep you."
"And you," I thought. They'd taken me from the king's prison and were therefore just as guilty of crimes against the king as I was. The large wooden door to the abbey was held open by a man holding a candle, the light reflecting off his shiny bald head, shaved in a white tonsure. He was quite old, with a curved back, large, bent nose, and sunken cheeks.
"The infirmary,"
said Arcas. The monk turned to shuffle away into the darkness. We followed the candle as it bobbed along a corridor with arched windows and into a small room with four straw-stuffed mattresses on the floor. One of them was covered in a threadbare white sheet, a thin pillow, and a quilt folded at the foot. It was the first time I had seen anything like a bed in months. I leaned towards it, and Arcas let me down with a thump. I rubbed my hip and glared at him. He motioned toward me with one hand.
"Get her cleaned up."
With that, he turned and left. "Charming fellow," I said to the monk as he lit a sconce on the wall. The monk looked at me sharply, but then he nodded.
"You can be a broft, to be sure. But with his history, it's understandable."
"And what is this history that makes his rudeness excusable?" He turned to me.
"Time for questions tomorrow. For now, we must tend to your physical state."
I wrapped my arms around myself and eyed him with alarm. The guards had been all too eager to amputate infected limbs. I'd threatened their filthy excuse for a healer with a blistering burn if he so much as entered my cell.
"Now, now," the monk said, his look softening.
"You're in a strange place, and you've no doubt suffered much, but this is Four Wind Abbey. The brothers and sisters of the Order of Fours have pledged to take in those wrongly persecuted and in need of sanctuary. They may be suspicious of you, but you won't be harmed." I studied him, the tightness around his eyes, the stiffness of his shoulders. "You're suspicious of me." He studied me a little too long before replying.
"I will judge you by your actions, not your heritage. But I recommend you keep your fire hidden. Not everyone is accepting as I am, pledge or no."
"You don't need to tell me that." He nodded and gestured at my ankle.
"I am Brother Gamut. It's said I have a talent with herbs. If you'll show me your injuries, perhaps I can ease some of your pain."
Reluctantly, I unwrapped the cloth under my cuff. The monk sucked in a breath as he saw the reddened shank that was once an ankle. He seemed to forget his distrust, moving closer to frown at the metal.
"We must remove that at once."
He turned and shuffled to the door.
"No swords," I begged.
He turned back, amusement crinkling the edges of his eyes.
"No, child. I have a set of keys that may work. I'll return shortly."
I wasn't sure I believed him. But true to his word, he was back in minutes with a set of keys, a bundle of cloth, and a tray that held a cup, a bowl of water, and a mortar and pestle, which he placed on a three-legged stool. His palsied hand trembled as he tried each key, until one of them opened my ankle cuff with a decisive snick. After setting the metal aside, he untied a bunch of herbs from his belt. Carefully separating the stems and selecting certain leaves and flowers, he ground and mixed them with the mortar and pestle, put them in a bowl with water, and placed the linen strips in to soak. I hissed in protest as he cleaned the wound and wrapped the linen strips around my stinging ankle. He looked at me from under his white brows.
"There are signs of infection, but you're fortunate. It's not far advanced. I have herbs that will prevent any poisoning of the blood and ease your pain."
When it numbed, I went light-headed with relief.
"What did you use?" I asked.
"Many plants grow on the mountain. I've been experimenting with what's most effective. This is a mixture of birch leaf, wintergreen, and ice tail. My tea will also help."
He reached toward the tray and handed me a steaming cup. A few minutes earlier, I would have looked suspiciously at the brew, but the monk had proved his abilities with my ankle. I took a sip. The minty taste of wintergreen was laced with an unfamiliar tang that must have been ice tail. When the cup was empty, I handed it back.
"May I take a bath?" I asked, as he gathered his bowl and herbs. Despite bone-deep fatigue, I longed for the impossible luxury of cleanliness.
"Tomorrow," he answered. "The tincture and the tea are working together to make you drowsy. Relief from pain is a blessing, is it not?"
My eyes were closing, my head lolling onto the pillow. But Arcas the Angry has decreed I'm to be cleaned up. Do you not fear his wrath?
He smiled, his hand on the door. "There are things I fear much more."
Light poured through the infirmary window, searing my unaccustomed eyes. I hadn't seen more than dull, indirect light from my small, barred, north-facing window for months. I'd become some nocturnal, burrowing animal that cringes back into the velvet darkness of its den. Currently, my den consisted of a mattress stuffed with straw, a soft quilt, and a thin, down-filled pillow. It seemed a dream, to be free from cold, free from pain, free from being doused with foul water. Thank tempest it wasn't gruel that sat on the three-legged stool, but a bowl of thick porridge, a slice of cheese and a glass of water. Squinting against the light, I threw off my covers and crawled over, shivering beneath the wavy glass of the window. The porridge had a dash of molasses. The cheese was salty and soft. Bliss. I was back in bed by the time Brother Gamut bustled in with a cup of his healing tea. He bent over, carefully unwinding the linen around my ankle, a task my mother had performed on many a wounded man or woman or child from our village. My chest grew tight, and a strange vulnerability stole over me, as if it were my mother's touch in the monk's gentle hands. I fought against it, desperate for the numbness that had protected me from grief for so many months. When he was done, I again broached the subject of a bath, a hot one, as I had little energy to heat the water myself. A battered metal tub was carried in by two monks, a tall, thin woman and a stout man, both glancing at me suspiciously. I ignored their looks, instead watching as bucket after gloriously steaming bucket was brought and poured into the tub.
"Remember to keep your ankle dry," Brother Gamut warned, as he and the other two left.
As I sank into the bath, warmth made my blood sing. My power, so long kept limp and weak with poor food, damp cold and despair, surged outward from my heart. I dangled my injured leg over the edge of the tub and lathered up the soap, my spirit caught between conflicting emotions. The lightness and relief seemed too good to be true. When I was done, I stepped out of the grime-blackened water and dried off, leaning on the tub for support. Brother Gamut had left a pile of modest clothes. I pulled on the linen underclothes, brown robe, and leather sandals, and was hit by the contrast of my clean self with the stench of the dress I'd chucked off. Months in prison had turned my simple blue dress and underclothes into a handful of tattered rags. I picked them up and moved towards a lit brazier near the far wall, then changed my mind and headed for the door. I had a better method of disposal in mind. As I turned the knob, I hesitated. Was I allowed to leave? What would they do if I disobeyed their rules? The prison guards might have been afraid to touch me, but Arcas had already threatened me more than once. His frost would protect him from my heat, and he might turn out to be as brutal as the guards. Although I trembled a little, I pushed the door open. I refused to let fear rule my actions. I was no longer a prisoner, and if they treated me like one, I would escape as soon as I was healed enough to do so. After trailing down the corridor, avoiding the curious eyes of hooded figures, I leaned a hand against the cold stone wall and cursed the unsteadiness of my legs. I reminded myself that only the day before I'd had trouble standing.